Current time is now 7:26 p.m. here in Seoul, South Korea. It's time for our Thursday's history lesson. It is Made in Korea with Professor John DeMoya from Seoul National University joining us on this studio today. Professor DeMoya, good to see you again.
Good to see you again. Thank you.
I was always saying, Professor DeMoya, it's always fun to talk history. But I've always been like, I want to talk sports with him more. We need more time.
I'm not sure that that's my decision to make.
We got to talk like sports history or something like that because...
I could definitely do that.
He's from Philadelphia. I mean, you know, Philadelphia is a big sports city and I'm from New York City. And, we're just talking about Saquon Barkley signing with the Philadelphia Eagles and your beloved Giants.
I will restrain myself from any further comments.
I'm not a Giants fan. I'm a Jets fan, unfortunately. And we were just talking about how interesting that is. And I started thinking about all these, former players who joined the rival teams. Johnny Damon when he signed with the Yankees and shaved his beard and everything like that?
Absolutely.
And in football, you had Luis Figo going from Barcelona to Real Madrid, where I think he literally got death threats afterwards. But, we already got some Eagles fans here. Jacob Unson says, go Birds.
Okay. All right.
Well, the Birds could also mean, the Ravens.
I'm assuming that this is green and not purple and darker colors, yeah.
Oh, man, I have the curse of being a Jets fan. So anyways, we're not going to talk about sports. We'll leave that for our outside the studio talk here. But today's a very, very fun topic. We have a Korean filmmaker by the name of Shin Sang-ok. And not only did he direct numerous films, but he also disappeared for several years in a very famous, I should say infamous, incident between 1978 and 1986, where he claimed that he was abducted by North Korea. So what happened in this case? Where were Shin and his wife Choi Eun-hee during this time? And why would North Korea want to capture a filmmaker? With what intent? We'll talk about all that and more. But first, Professor, who was Shin Sang-ok and what was his early career like?
Sure. Shin Sang-ok is considered one of those post-Haebang, particularly the second half of the 50s, early part of the 60s, seminal figures in Korean cinema, sometimes called the golden age of Korean film. Lady Sung-man, early Park Chung-hee, had his own studio, Shin Studios. So up until, say, the middle 60s, quite well-known, multiple films directed of his own, some of which are classics. And then, of course, with the production team as well, someone who's very active in promoting other Korean films and sort of a major player on the scene.
So he was a big name.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, and still is in Korean film.
Yeah. Right. So again, this is the thing for me. Like, I'm not familiar with, the filmmakers pre-2000.
Okay.
And so I've heard only about him because of this particular incident.
Exactly. And that's the case for many people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so, but then, the older folks will tell you that he is a very well-known filmmaker. And you'll understand why, if it is true that he was abducted by the North Koreans, why specifically he was abducted by North Koreans, because of his status as a well-known filmmaker. But how was his work received and what kind of reputation did he have within the film community? And I want to kind of know what kind of level he was before this incident.
I would say at a very high level. I mean, I don't know the categories or designations are,
but Bong Joon-ho?
Okay. Yeah. No, for this time, yes.
Oh, really?
I certainly think he was among the top filmmakers. Again, he's usually in the descriptions you read considered one of those major figures. Again, the films from the second half of the 50s, early part of the 60s are often still taught, but even then were very highly regarded.
All right. So now we're going to talk about Choi Eun-hee
because,
again, we know that she was his wife. But how did she become the first of the pair to go to North Korea, though?
Yeah, this is the interesting thing.
Like, it wasn't at the same time.
No, this is what's really interesting. She was taken, persuaded to come to Hong Kong on some sort of illusory story about possibly working, because she was an actress, had been married to Shin, they were divorced when this happens. This is at some point in 1978, she's enticed to come to Hong Kong with the lure of employment.
And as an actress.
Yeah, and presumably some other kind of work that will help her career.
Sure.
And at that point, it turns out that it is under North Korean auspices, and they essentially kidnap her and take her. As it turns out, we know later, but not at the time, he didn't, that it's essentially bait to get him, to draw him in as well, because they figured he would pursue her, wanting to know what was going on.
And so if you're aware with how the situation was within the film industry in Asia, there was a big, big interest in Hong Kong films in South Korea.
Yeah.
And so a lot of, you know, people back in like the late 70s and early 80s, they were all watching Hong Kong films, and they know all these, you know, famous Hong Kong movie stars and so forth. And so when you're enticed to be part of a Hong Kong film, I mean, this is a big opportunity for you.
Yeah, and given the vitality of the scene, as you suggest, it probably also would not have seemed implausible for someone to contact you and say, would you come to Hong Kong and at least talk business?
Right.
You're not thinking that this is somebody with some sort of...
I'm not going to risk being skeptical about this and risk, you know...
Certainly, you're not thinking North Korea is behind this.
No. Like, if let's say the Phillies call you and go, you know, John, I want you to be the new defensive coordinator for the... you're going to be like, yeah, all right, nice try, buddy. You know, stuff like that. But when you're an actress, and you're enticed with something that could be plausible, it would happen. So how did then, you talked about how Chae-eun was first abducted by North Koreans,
yes,
and this was a way to bait Shin Sang-wook. So how did Shin end up going into North Korea, and by what means did he travel there?
Okay. He, according to the timeline, again, this is roughly 6 months later, so later in 78, is looking for her, knows that this is roughly the last point at which she is seen, and goes there. And he also then will be taken and brought to North Korea. I don't know whether this is by boat or by plane, but my guess would be probably by boat. Obviously, a means of... that less detected by
sort of international
observation.
Yeah, because planes, even though it's the 70s still, though,
and,
you know.
And just to place it in context, this is not that, I hate to say it, unusual for North Korea, in that we know now, of course, of numerous abductions of Japanese citizens in the 70s. And then, you know, obviously much earlier, going to the Korean War period, all kinds of claims about South Koreans being abducted during the war and being held, you know. So this is not that, it's just the prominence of the individual that is particularly sort of outstanding.
So was Shin then told that his wife was abducted?
This is the interesting thing. Yes, but not for several years.
What?
Because believe me, I've been doing some of the reading. Apparently, they were both treated quite well, but apparently there is going to be a period of several years where they will not actually be reunited, so to speak, until 1983.
But he knows his wife is in North Korea.
I don't know that he knows he's been kidnapped. Well, obviously, he knows he's been kidnapped
once he's taken there. Right.
And they go through, you know, a certain amount of being shown off the normal display things, and also, I imagine, a certain amount of ideological training to make sure they're going to stay. But at least physically, they're not back in the same room until 1983. So I don't know if they were told. But again, from what I've read, that it was, for him, for at least a couple of years, a mystery as to why he had been taken.
The mystery would
not
be
that
there.
He had also a lot of freedom to move around and ask questions.
No. See, and there's also a reason why they were treated well there.
Absolutely, because we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to this.
They wanted them to do a particular set of tasks.
Exactly, so I mean, it wasn't one of those things where let's just kind of randomly, you know, kidnap some famous people.
No. He's very
South
talented,
Korea.
And they have a mission for him.
Yeah. Exactly, and so also would have made sense if, you know, let's say, you know, they go, listen, you know, we'll let you see your wife once this project is done and over with. Maybe that was one of the things that were being mentioned.
Sure.
But what controversy is there concerning his travel motives?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, one, given that this is 1978, so we're talking late Park Chung-hee, and then obviously when he disappears, moving into the subsequent years, moving into Chun-doo-won, you don't go to North Korea as a South Korean citizen.
No.
He has probably no way of showing until much later, when he gets out after 86, that in fact is the case. And for a long time, I think even until the 2000s and 2010s, there was a great deal of skepticism. And then more importantly, we can talk about it a little bit later, even when he was there, he was in at least one international forum at a film festival, I believe in Belgrade. Whether he was forced or whether he was smart enough to say it, they were both shown publicly in 1984, and they said, oh, we voluntarily have come to North Korea. I mean, they were still there under watch even while they were in Eastern Europe. So they were probably being very careful. So what I mean is he had no way of knowing that if he came back to South Korea without any evidence of how he would be treated, whether he'd be arrested, whether he'd be considered a political problem.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, think about it. I mean, when you're under 24-hour surveillance, and who knows what the North Koreans are capable of doing, and you're in, what is it, Belgrade they were in?
At least when they were seen publicly saying, like, yes, we're with the North Koreans, but we're over there voluntarily.
You're not going to go, we were forced here, please rescue, you know, that once you say that, you know, who knows what would happen.
And we can talk in a little bit about the circumstances of their escape, which is also kind of interesting.
Exactly. So all of this, and we had a bunch of listeners saying this itself is a movie.
There are books, and I believe there are at least rumors when you do a quick scan of the net that there might be film productions in process because this is such a fascinating story.
Marilyn says, I could see this big on the big screen in a tearjerker movie, like when they finally reunite the husband and wife after all of this. So let's talk about what happened to Shin and Che during their quote-unquote stay in North Korea. Like, you talked about how they were treated well.
Yeah.
But what was their stay like, though?
You mean in terms of everyday life?
Everyday life.
Yeah, sure. My impression is that they would be treated as well as one can be if you're an elite in North Korea, in the sense that you're under guard, but I mean you're being well fed, you're being kind of taken around, you're in Pyongyang, because again, they're preparing him for a task eventually, as it will turn out. Kim Jong-il is very interested in upgrading the quality of film productions in North Korea, and Shin being an expert and who ran his own studio, who did well as a director on his own, this is precisely why he's been targeted. And I imagine Che is probably considered also as an actress and part of the production process. Oh, I should have mentioned earlier, she's also heavily involved in Shin films in the early 60s. Mm-hmm. So when they were married. So yes, they both know a lot about production. They know about directing, acting. Kim Jong-il's like, this is the winning team for us.
Kim Jong-il, one of the things I need to know about him is not only did he have love for a cognac, and
other high-end products.
And other high-end products and women, but he loved movies.
Absolutely. He had a private library that was very extensive.
Oh, absolutely. And which is why it's funny because, North Koreans in general are not allowed to watch any foreign media, right? They're not allowed to watch any movies and dramas.
I imagine there's an immense restriction on
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah. We heard about recently, a couple of years ago, a North Korean was, executed for illegally smuggling Squid Games, right? And so
I didn't know that in particular, but yeah, I know there are always problems with DVDs on the border and also with other transmissions coming in, and they try to police this, sure.
Right, exactly. But all throughout this time, during the Kim Jong-il rule, where he's a big, 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 big film fan. He's watched so many movies. I know that he especially liked Godzilla, right? And so, like, when he watched Godzilla, we're going to make our own Godzilla movie.
And this is one of the ones that Shin will direct, exactly.
And so, they're basically there to film movies.
Yeah, and in particular to upgrade. Kim is aware, as someone who's deeply aware of his own industry, that it's not internationally competitive, it's not quite. And so Shin is going to be his man to put the North Korean film industry on the map.
Ladies and gentlemen, a bit of a, spoiler here, but North Korea does not become a powerhouse.
No. They do not start winning the Golden Bear in Berlin. They do not start winning in Paris. Sorry, Cannes. They do not start winning Hollywood Oscars. No.
No.
But at least in the back of their minds, the idea that North Korean films will be a better, higher aesthetic quality, that at least is the nominal goal.
Yeah, and so one of the major films that come out of this, and I've mentioned
the
this.
The one that always gets mentioned, yeah.
Purigasari.
Exactly.
Right, and so Purigasari is the North Korean version of Godzilla.
Yep.
But with each movie that North Korea produces, there's always some sort of propaganda message.
Oh, sure.
And so even with Purigasari, which is, again, the North Korean version of Godzilla, there was a message because that monster, the Godzilla monster, was basically the United States.
Okay. I didn't know the exact translation, but I mean, this doesn't surprise me that there's some sort of metaphor. Sure.
Comes into the city and starts smashing everything, and that's North Korea, and this is their way of saying the Korean War started because of the invasion by the United States, and this is why, we were rebuilding and so forth. And so there's a lot of symbolism with this, but I would say, have you had a chance to watch that movie by any chance?
No, I've seen clips, but I have to be honest, I've never sat down and had the patience to watch the entire thing.
I've seen other
North Korean films, but that's a whole other matter.
I've watched like 3 minutes of that movie, just clips.
Yeah, I've seen clips, exactly.
Only just because of curiosity. And I guess in some ways, considering when this was released and considering
this
also...
This would be mid-80s, yeah.
Yeah, and also being that it's North Korea and the lack of... I mean, you could bring in the best director and the best actress,
precisely.
But we don't have the technology.
No. The production values are somewhat dubious.
It didn't win any awards, ladies and gentlemen. But I want... All of this happened. There's a number of movies that came out, and Kim Jong-il, obviously, very happy with this because no one is going to give it two thumbs down. Everyone gives it two thumbs up because, you know, what are you going to do? But they end up escaping.
Yes.
Okay.
They were probably the entire time thinking about it. Apparently, even before Shin got to meet his wife in 83, he had at least twice tried to escape, so they kept him under more close supervision.
Right.
So, yeah, they're... They appear in Belgrade in 84, just to remind that say we're here voluntarily, but they're always looking for opportunities.
Absolutely. And so can you tell us how they were able to finally escape?
Yeah, this is really interesting. They are allowed to travel to Vienna to pursue funding opportunities for, I believe it's a film about Genghis Khan, of all things, that North Korea is going to do their epic. And while they're in Vienna, they apparently either manage to get away from their handlers, or at least, you know, briefly they're out of the room, and they essentially run through traffic and make it to the U.S. embassy and, you know, ask for asylum. And the versions I've read are that the North Koreans, you know, do obviously pursue them, but when you hit the U.S. embassy and you're inside, they are essentially recognized as having achieved asylum, and they do so that by the U.S. protecting it, they then manage to get back to the U.S.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And usually,
this would be 86. Yeah,
usually they're very cautious with going anywhere near any kind of embassy when they travel abroad.
Yeah, yeah,
because of incidents like this.
Precisely.
But we talked about how we're talking about the 70s and 80s right now, mm-hmm. where there is. Not the kind of information that we can get from the internet.
No, as we there's not nearly now. The overload of the availability, right?
Right. And so when you have a guy, Shin Sang-ho, a renowned filmmaker in Belgrade at a film festival going, I'm here voluntarily.
It raises questions.
To help North Koreans.
It raises questions. No, and you're not sure what's true or not.
And because 70s, 80s, you know, we talked about in the United States, you know, there's the Red Scare. There's also a Red Scare in South Korea, too.
No question about it.
Communist, terrible stuff.
And also, if you want to play with this a little bit, the context, Shin Studios apparently in, I think, the early 70s gets either its license doesn't get renewed, or it goes through a weaker period in the early 70s under Park and Yushin.
Yeah.
So not that Shin's going completely the other way, but he, you know, you might plausibly, if you know the story, be like, okay, like he's looking for other opportunities because clearly his South Korean film career is drying up.
Yeah, they could have easily gone, you know, because the government's very much against production.
There are all kinds of valid questions to be raised.
So when he does come back to South Korea, though, I wonder how he's received.
That's the interesting thing. He doesn't come back right away precisely because he's concerned about that possibility. So he, let's see if I have the timeline right. He comes back, they come back as a couple, and I believe they do get remarried. I'm not sure how long that... Yeah, exactly.
Well, when we go through that ordeal, no matter what kind of ugly divorce it was, you guys are going to be falling back in love again.
Okay. So they get back, and it said, the sources I've read said they're in Virginia for a while, and they're debriefed, so I'm guessing that the U.S. government wants to talk to them because they've spent a good 8 years in North Korea.
There's not as much information.
Yeah, as you can. Then this is what's really fascinating. I remember this is the first time I heard the story when I was a grad student. He is in L.A. under another name. I think it's Simon Sheen or Simon Shin, something like that, an anglicized version. And he's doing sort of bad American comedies, of which the most famous is, and this is almost as funny as Pulgasari. He does those Three Ninja movies with those little kids. He's involved early 90s, late 80s, like these little kids who are like kind of, you know, martial arts type films.
Like Karate Kid?
No, Three Ninjas.
Three Ninjas! Oh, I remember that!
He's involved with the first one, I think, as a director and then producers. But again, under this other name, which, you know, people don't necessarily connect him to this.
Oh my goodness, Three Ninjas!
The first one, I believe he directed it.
No, because I remember watching this back when I was a kid.
Yeah, so he revives his career this way. So he does come back to South Korea, but this is well into probably the middle to late 90s.
I'm trying to find out.
If he's...
Even with director, it says John Turteltaub.
Okay, then again, it might be as a producer, but he's definitely involved somehow in terms of the overall crediting of the work.
Oh my goodness, I so remember this.
He definitely goes back to LA and reinvents himself.
I'm trying to... You know, there is a number of Korean descents, James Kang, Park Woo-sang, is there, I'm trying to find.
Okay, the name I've seen is Simon, and I think it's Simon Shin or Simon Sheen, something like that.
Yeah, I can't, oh, well, let me just do
he
this.
He basically picks up a pseudonym and, yeah.
I can't even find it. Maybe they're just like, oh, we got to hide this or something like
no,
that.
No, it's okay. It's got it.
Oh, but, sorry, I'm looking at Three Ninja Kids. No, this is no, a different movie.
It's
Three Ninjas. Is which, well, no, this is what it is. But anyways, that's not important here. So, okay, so he's in the United States.
Yeah.
By the way, Three Ninjas didn't get a whole lot of good review on this.
No, and so I've wondered with the name change whether that was also kind of like, well, this is not my something I want to be associated with.
Yeah, so he does still come back to South Korea, though.
Yes. Again, I can't remember the exact year, but he comes back somewhere in late 90s, early 2000s,
sure.
And basically spends the remainder of his days until he passes away in the early 2000s. I guess not, but sorry, to your earlier question, he doesn't return to South Korea right away because exactly at that point in time, the circumstances of his 8-year gap are not clear, and he's not quite sure what this will mean in terms of how he'd be treated and how he'd be greeted.
Oh, look at this. Chris Rhodes, one of our listeners, said he did the follow-up, Three Ninjas Knuckle Up. So
okay. So I'm not imagining it. Okay, yeah. I knew he was involved in... I want to say there are at least several of these movies, not just one. Or, yeah.
I can't believe... The first one was so bad. Like, they came in no, with more of
to
them?
To give you a quick context, this is how I first heard about it when I was a grad student taking a class at Columbia. The professor was talking about, oh, by the way, did you know that Shin Sung-ok did these L.A. Kid movies? And I was like, what? And that's the context.
You're right. It's says yeah. here the film was directed by Shin Sang-ok using the pseudonym Simon Sheen.
There we go. Okay.
Not yeah. Shin, Sheen.
I used to say, I knew it was a, yeah.
Very nice.
So I imagine probably people who knew him in this guise probably knew nothing about his earlier career.
Yeah.
I can't believe that he was like, yeah, by the way, I was just in North Korea and I came back.
You know, I made this movie called Brudasari.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like Godzilla.
But he has at least 3 or 4 different careers packed in about a 20 to 30 year period.
I have to say, you know, we've heard about a number of people who were abducted for, you know,
yeah.
Japanese were abducted because they taught to teach North Korean
precisely,
spies.
Precisely, language teachers, exactly.
Yeah, language teachers. Even South Koreans were abducted to speak the South Korean way because
yeah.
we have
and
the different accents.
And if you know the other famous case, they were voluntary, but the 4 Americans who went over as
yeah,
GIs.
And they were actors.
They were actors, yes. And also English teachers. And
yeah,
exactly. But they're not well known in the States, but they're known in South Korea for all kinds of reasons.
There you go. Interesting story. A lot of our listeners very fascinated with his story there. And we also have a lot of people coming out saying that they're from Philadelphia to Aaron. Aaron saying, go Phillies, because she doesn't watch football. And so we got an Eagles fan.
I will only say the same, go Phillies. And yeah.
Phillies, 40, what is it, the Sixers fan and everything. He's a big-time Philly fan. All right. Professor DeMoya, thank you very much for your stories and your history lesson today. Have a safe one. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks very much.
You can listen to Korea Now with me, SJ Lee, by downloading the Arirang Radio application or tune in online by visiting www.arirangradio.com. So make sure you tune in Mondays through Fridays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Korea time.